League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
They've had some serious discussions here over the last few days, his reps in Cleveland. Rose met with the Lakers earlier today, 3 hours with Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka. For Derrick Rose, his focus throughout free agency has been to get back to a winning situation, to get back to a very good team. Right now, Cleveland feels like it's got a chance here to close this out. Money won't be a factor. The Lakers can pay him around $3 million, Cleveland $2 million. But Derrick Rose is still making upwards of $20 million a year from his shoe deal, his Adidas deals. The Lakers felt like they made up some ground today. They'd like to sign him, but I think Cleveland still feels they're in the driver's seat here to get Derrick Rose.
Mr. Simpson, I do vote to grant parole when eligible, and that will conclude this hearing.
Thank you. I've always thought I've been pretty good with people, and I've basically spent a conflict-free life. I'm not a guy that ever got into fights on the street and with the public and everybody. I'm not a guy who lived a criminal life. You know, I'm a pretty straight shooter. I've always tried to be a good soldier. I wish this would have never happened. I apologize to him at my sentencing. There's nothing I can do about this kind of media circus that's going on right now, but I could do something about the whole thing in the beginning. If I would have made a better judgment, none of this would have happened, and I take full responsibility. I mean, I could easily stay in Nevada, but I don't think you guys want me here. I'm no danger to pull a gun on anybody. You know, I never have in my life. I've never been accused of it in my life. Nobody's ever accused me of pulling any weapon on them.
The way he kept talking, yeah. Long-windedness, yeah. Which everybody will tell you is exactly what you're not supposed to do, it indicated to me, and we don't want to extrapolate too much based on, you know, 45 minutes of testimony, a guy who felt he could still charm anyone, he yeah. could still yep. convince anyone, you know, the guy who sat down and without a lawyer, talk to the police mm-hmm. right after the murders because he figured, I'm OJ.
Right.
All righty, good evening and welcome to the Friday Night Drive Time. I am Joe Rogowski.
So I wonder, what would it be like to actually strap on the pads and, well?
Hey, Joe, you think you can play golf for Toledo Storm? Try this.
That sounds like fun.
Just walking around in this stuff is heavy. This gear is so heavy.
Finally, it's time to take to the ice.
Here I go, ready or not. Ready or not, I'm ready to play goalie. Yeah, don't kill me with power shots. My problem is I'm not very mobile. And I'm not mobile and I'm not very good. Uh-oh. Oh, shoot. Uh-oh. Help! Help!
The Zamboni? Well, he's got a point. I have driven go-karts. Golf carts.
Oh, down!
Lawnmowers. And even the news van. But a Zamboni?
Nothing like driving a Zamboni. I've got a new vehicle.
It's called street soccer or international freestyle. I don't quite know the moves, but after a week of camp, I'll be an expert like the rest of them.
Give me a slow, thin, beer league softball pitch so I can hit. That's it. Right there.
I actually hurt my knee on that slide. My lawyers will be contacting Owen shortly. Ah, just kidding, ladies. Great season so far. Keep it up. Joe Rogowski, Fox Toledo News.
Joe Rogowski, Toledo 11, the news channel.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome once again to the extravaganza on a free-for-all Friday afternoon as we broadcast live from the media tent here at Highland Meadows at the 2017 Marathon Classic. The LPGA Tour event goes on day number two, round number two. It'll be very interesting to see what kind of a move is made by the defending champion Lydia Ko, who was in a little bit of danger coming into her round today because she did not have her best day yesterday. How did Jim Heller describe it, Jim Cushlin? She was kind of like a a very conservative stock market investor, just trying to kind of keep her money safe, doesn't want to do anything real risky right out of the gate, going to wait before she puts it all on something big. We'll see. She's a two-time champion, and we'll see if she can become a three-time champion. That starts with making the cut here today. Yep. We give you leaderboard updates as we go. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, I was going to agree with that. Yeah, got to make the cut first.
That's right. She's got to make the cut today, so we'll see what happens. But she kind of stumbled out of the gate a little bit yesterday, maybe by design. Not designed to stumble, but designed to play it safe, as Jim was talking to us about. But we certainly look forward to updates all day long here from the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows in Sylvania. And I want to remind you again, all weekend long, what Jim Heller told us yesterday, Kush, so many great ways to get discounted passes to be here for the weekend play. Police and fire and military veterans just have to show their IDs for all of those things to get in free. You got great buy one, get one, half off deals going on all over the place. There's so many great ways to save money and get out here and enjoy just a gorgeous, gorgeous day and a gorgeous course as the ladies get out there and fight for this marathon championship. So that's where we are. And Kush, I want to start, and you can go ahead and join me. Normally I like to do my monologue alone for the first segment of the show, but I want to talk about Joe Rychnowski. I feel really I'm trying to think of a word to describe this. It's a lot of this at the same time. And what I mean by that is there's a very good friend of mine, another radio figure, another media figure, a little bit like Joe, but did a lot of things. He was down in Akron for like 25 years, Jim, and I don't know how well you know or remember hearing of Matt Patrick, who was a morning radio guy down in Akron, like I said, for about 25 years before moving down to Houston, Texas, and doing radio down there the last 6 years. He just lost his battle with cancer literally last week. Very, very aggressive and rare type of melanoma. It started in his esophagus, then spread to his brain, to his liver, and so on and so forth. Of course, we just found out 2 days ago that Senator John McCain, a U.S. war hero who survived, the Hanoi Hilton in the Vietnam War, just an absolute war hero who went through hell, is now going to have to go through a different kind, as he has a very aggressive form of brain cancer. And then, of course, we lose Joe Rychnowski, who was battling, obviously, the same thing at an extraordinarily young age of 49. And this is a guy, Kush, who you just played a little bit. Of course, he was with us here on the ticket.
Yep.
For, you know, up until what, about 2014, I think, was the last time he did his weekend shows.
Yep, that's right.
Right about the time we began this show.
Basically, yeah, Joe, it was basically the same ballpark time, yeah.
Yeah, same time frame, if not the same exact week or month or whatever, but basically the same time frame. And he, of course, has been all over Toledo media for so long on WTOL, right here on the ticket as well. And just this terribly, terribly sad thing for him and his family and for everybody who knew him. And the tributes are pouring in, by the way, from across the Toledo sports landscape, even going all the way out to people who are no longer in Toledo, like Matt Campbell, the former Rockets coach,
right,
who's at Iowa State now, tweeting yesterday. Or actually, take that back, that was this morning, early this morning, Matt Campbell tweeting about Joe Rychnowski, an amazing man who took care of a nervous and young head coach at Toledo. Of course, himself grateful for his support and kindness, will be greatly missed. DeShone Kizer, who's about to start in, what, a week? His first professional football training camp?
That's true, yep.
You know, and he's out there in Cleveland now getting ready and took the time out of his day yesterday, last night, to say about Joe Rychnowski, awesome guy. It was a pleasure to have him cover my high school career. Truly a Toledo great. And that is 100% true as well. I mean, and they're just coming in from all over. And I just want to... Not that I speak for the radio station, of course, and Mike Miller will speak for himself and everybody, and you too, but just on behalf of the station, condolences, prayers, strength, comfort, support, anything we can throw spiritually at Joe's family and friends and those who knew him best, we want to do that.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And you know, out of all the outpouring that I've seen since last night when the news of this broke, and, you know, one of the tweets that I saw, to me, it summed it up well. One of the best human beings I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. And that is so, so true. I mean, he would go out of his way to make sure that you felt special. And that's not just in some of his, like I played in some of the clips from either TOL or Fox or whatever when he was doing some of his great sports segments. But when the microphones were off, too, he was the type of guy, he wanted to know about you. He wanted to, you know, get to know you. And he always had that upbeat personality about him. He was just an absolute pleasure to be around whenever you had the chance to. And for me, you know, my thinking for me, the Jim Cushlin story about Joe Rognoski that really to me sums it up is back almost 6 years ago now, early August 1st and 2nd of 2011. And this is before you got here, so you know, I was supposed to be subbing for the main host that day, August 1st and 2nd.
Right.
Well, that was the day my daughter was born, on August 2nd. And out of the blue, I called Joe up. See, hey, can you help me? I know you're pretty busy. He's like, no, you got to be there. You got to go do that. I will absolutely be in, but you have to do one thing for me, Jim. After your child is born, you got to call into the show that I'm subbing for you, and we got to talk about this. And honestly, Bob, that was the one time, and I know mine's shorter than yours, that's the one time in my radio career where I'm on the air and bordering got speechless.
Wow.
And he's just having a great time with it. He wanted everybody to know how special it was for me. It had nothing even to do with him. And he wanted to make sure that everybody knew how special it was and wanted to know what I could tell him at that moment, because it's just hours after my daughter was born in 2011. And I'm trying to give answers. And you know, Bob, I'm loud, and I always have something to say, as you know from doing this show. And that's the one time in my life on the air where I was bordering on speechless. And that's not good, as we know, for radio. But that, to me, that whole quick story for me sums up what an outstanding human being Joe Rognoski was.
Well, that's a great story, and I don't have anything even remotely close to that to share, Jim, on a personal level. I will say this, which I think you captured in the montage. I think one of the things so many other people who didn't have personal moments like that and you know, speechless moments like that with Joe would say is that his energy and his TV hits that he did, no matter what kind he was doing, were energetic, and they were entertaining, funny, self-deprecating, hilarious, those kinds of things. You know, people, a lot of guys take themselves way too seriously.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do that. I mean, I for a little inside radio, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I still do air checks myself. I'll go back and listen and say, oh, that sounded like crap. You sounded too, you know, pompous, too serious, could have lightened that up a little bit, whatever the case may be. Joe always was able to make you smile and make you laugh a little bit with the stuff that he would cover and the features he would do. And I knew him a little bit better, Jim, back in 2003, 4, 5, 6, when I was doing the mornings at another station here in town. And that, you know, and he was doing his thing, and we would see each other at various events, whether it be Rocket Games, and we had him on a pregame show a couple of times when we were doing pregame for the Battle of I-75 for Toledo and BG, and just such a very fun person to be around. And I'm going to take everything you just said on its face about what a great human being he was, and I'll add what a fun human being he was, because I didn't know him away from the microphone or really away from the you know, the sporting event world in Toledo, but what I did know of him, I just enjoyed thoroughly. And when you watch him on television too, you enjoyed him thoroughly. And when you listen to him on the radio, as he did on the weekends here on the Ticket, you just really enjoy the sound and the energy and the enthusiasm and the fun of Joe Rognoski. So for all of those reasons, it's a different sports landscape in Toledo without Joe.
And no question about that.
Would agree with that.
Yeah, no question about that last part. He was definitely, especially sports wise, but in general, he was definitely one of the great gifts that this town was given.
No question about that, and God rest his soul, and obviously thank God that he is not dealing with the pain and the struggle of what attacked him, that very aggressive cancer that that he had to battle. I know it's an old cliche to say he's in a better place now and he's in no pain now, but you know, I believe in that sort of thing, and if that brings a little bit of comfort to the Rognoski family, well then, by God, please accept that. Okay, so to the business of sports today, as I mentioned, we are live here at the Marathon Classic in Highland Meadows in Sylvania. We're looking forward to getting a leaderboard update here in less than 10 minutes, probably. And we've got a number of other things we're going to be checking in on today as well. You heard in the montage, and Jim, I just need to, kind of like I did yesterday, to an extent, I really need to hit on what happened with the parole hearing yesterday. I asked people on our Twitter feed yesterday, Jim, which is Sports Radio 106.5, our Twitter feed. I asked people, is the O.J. story a sports story or a news story now? And I think the vast majority of them said it's a news story. But you know what? Turn on ESPN. Turn on ESPN and turn on virtually every sports show around the country. Look at every sports website. And, yes, you are going to see stories and conversations and debates on O.J. Simpson's parole because he is O.J. bleeping Simpson. Because one of the parole board members, and, Jim, I don't know if you got a chance to see it or just listen, one of the parole board members actually was wearing a Kansas City Chiefs tie.
I did see that later on.
Hearing, showing that he was clearly an NFL fan, and thus giving at least the impression that there might be some celebrity worship going on. This is a Hall of Famer. I love the NFL. And another one of the parole board members, and I didn't see this personally. I was told this morning. Had some kind of not a replica, but some sort of a representation of a Heisman Trophy as well. The four of them, Kush, having such jovial moments in a two-hour parole hearing for a guy who was convicted of a violent crime. Armed robbery is a violent crime. Kidnapping is a violent crime. He was convicted of some really, really bad stuff, even if it's not the double murder that we know he should have been convicted of. And when I say we, I mean anybody with two eyes, two ears, and a functioning brain knows about that part. So for a violent criminal who's asking for parole, they were awfully jovial with him yesterday. They were joking with him. They were laughing. They were, kind of exchanging little smiles. And, boy, this is cute and this is fun. And no matter what he said at that hearing, it just didn't seem to matter a lick. They knew what they had their mind made up of what they were going to do. Maybe it's because their hands were tied. We talked about this some yesterday. They didn't have much of a choice about evaluating how he conducted himself in the hearing, because his point total was low enough, and I'll explain that if anybody needs it. His point total was low enough in how he conducted himself in the 9 years in prison to make him worthy of the parole. And for those who don't know, the mandatory point system that is followed for potential parolees in Nevada prisons, you get a point for every bad thing either that happens to you or that is a part of you or that you participate in while in prison. And you can also get points added to your total for things like being a man. And I mean that very literally. You get an automatic point in the Nevada parole system for being a male, because releasing a male is automatically a little bit more dangerous than releasing a female, it is believed. Personally, I think that's sexually discriminatory, but it is what it is. Statistically speaking, men are more likely to commit violent acts and be recidivists, meaning repeat offenders, if they get out on parole than women. So they give you a point for that. The total can go up as high as 11 or so, I believe, from what I was told this morning by an ABC News correspondent who's covering the parole hearing yesterday. And OJ had a 2 because he didn't have any problems in his 9 years. And, of course, how many problems could you really get into when you're not serving in Attica or Leavenworth? You're serving at Lovelock, where it's been described by those who have been incarcerated there as a cruise ship surrounded by barbed wire. Legit. Softball leagues, shuffleboard, tennis. I mean, just it's like, really? So it's not like he was doing hard time there. So all he had to do was not, I don't know, shank somebody, and your point total is going to stay low. By the way, he lost his point for being a man by being 70 now. If you're older, that they kind of see you as being less of a threat as well. So maybe the parole board members didn't have a choice, and they had to go by the point system, and OJ could have sat there in the parole hearing and flipped them all off. one by one. There were four of them, and still gotten parole because of what he did for the 9 years inside. But it's very disconcerting to me, and I know to a lot of other people, to watch the parole board members joking with O.J. Simpson and allowing him to retry and relitigate his case yesterday, rather than just saying, I screwed up badly, I should not have been there, I should not have done that, I made a mistake in judgment, it was terrible, terrible mistake, I hurt people that I didn't want to hurt, people that I consider my friends, considered then and do now, boy, I wish I could take that back. That's what parole boards usually want to hear. You got a minimal amount of that yesterday from O.J. Simpson. You got a lot of, I can't believe I'm sitting here in jail for taking back my stuff. Even the state of California admitted it was my stuff. So I can't believe that I had to go to jail for all of this. And I didn't hit anybody, and I didn't bring any guns. Other guys did, and they blamed it on me and said, well, you know, I'll get an easy out if I just blame O.J. And so O.J. takes the heat. He deflected his own responsibility for the violent crimes the entire time, mixing in the occasional, I wish I could do it over again and I wouldn't do it. That's the only form of regret, remorse, or contrition is the word I'm looking for. That's the only example of that he gave. So it was just so bizarre, and also so bizarre to hear how absolutely tone deaf he was during his rambling statements. Some of the things he said during that opening statement he made to the parole board defy belief. They do. They just defy belief. They defy common sense and logic. You played some of it, Kush, in the montage at the top. Get me back to some of that and prepare to stop it so that I can hit each of these points.
I've always thought I've been pretty good with people, and I've basically spent a conflict-free life.
Stop. I have basically spent a conflict-free life. Curiously, Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman were unavailable for comment in response to his conflict-free life. Please continue.
I'm not a guy that had ever gotten the fights on the street and with the public and everybody.
Stop. I didn't get into fights on the street with the public. I saved my fights for in my house when I beat the living hell out of my wife, black and blue, repeatedly, for the duration of my marriage. There are pictures. He was convicted, by the way. Specifically, the only time she pressed charges was in 1989. But pictures exist, and they flew all around the internet, of course. Not during the trial, because the internet was not anywhere nearly as, you know, widespread in 95 as it is today. But there were pictures from the public file of Nicole Brown Simpson's battered face that just make you cry. So he says, I didn't get any fights with the public. I didn't get any fights out on the street. No, you saved them for home when you beat up a defenseless woman. And you saved them for the front step of your estate, where you slashed two people to death. But at least it wasn't with the public. At least you slashed people that you kind of knew. One you knew very well, the one you sort of knew. Please continue.
I'm not a guy who lived a criminal life. You know, I'm a pretty straight shooter.
I'm not a guy who lived a criminal life. I'm a pretty straight shooter. Number one, beating your wife repeatedly is a criminal activity. Domestic violence is one of the most barbaric criminal activities that one can engage in on a regular basis. How about a one-time basis? Ray Rice did it one time. Caught on video, never got his job back. You did it for years. Kept making movies. Kept being a pitch man, an endorsement star. I'm not a guy who lived a criminal life. And then what was it? I'm a pretty straight shooter. Well, I don't know, because I haven't seen anybody you shot, but you are one hell of an effective slasher, that's for sure. Continue.
I've always tried to be a good soldier. I wish this would have never happened. I apologize to him at my sentencing. There's nothing I can do about this kind of media circus that's going on right now, but I could do something about the whole thing in the beginning. If I would have made a better judgment, none of this would have happened, and I take full responsibility. I mean, I could easily stay in Nevada, but I don't think you guys want me here. I'm no danger to pull a gun on anybody. You know, I never have in my life. I've never been accused of it in my life. Nobody's ever accused me of pulling any weapon on them.
Stop. A man who stood trial for double murder, for slashing two people to death to the point where they were nearly decapitated, just said that he's never been accused of pulling a weapon on anybody. The state of California accused you of that, sir. A jury in a civil trial agreed to the tune of $33 million that you did do those things. And yes, you were convicted in 1989 of beating your wife black and blue. You're going to stand there and tell that parole board you've never been accused of raising a weapon to anybody? Your fists are weapons, sir. That knife that you used, that knife, that 12-inch blade that you bought 6 weeks before the murders, yeah, I think somebody might want to disagree with you on that. The idea that this man went free yesterday might be the legally correct thing, because his 9 years in prison for armed robbery probably exceeded what most people get for armed robbery. And his point system, according to the Nevada parole system, his point total, probably warranted his release. I cannot say the law was wrong yesterday, but morally and ethically, he should not be in prison. He should be under one. And I hope people understand that. And I hope nobody, including those parole board members who were wearing NFL ties and everything else and hero worshiping, I hope they realize what they have done. All right, it is 3:33. Needed to get that out there. We'll talk about it if you would like to. You can respond to that, by the way, on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5, or you can, of course, dial us up at 866-240-1065. But don't do any of those things until we give you the Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Are you ready for this stat, Jim Cushlin? How about what the Kansas City Royals lineup did yesterday to the Tigers pitchers? In a 16-4 win to wrap up that series, KC, season-high 16 runs, season-high 19 hits, and 8 out of the 9 starters in the lineup had at least 2 hits. That is no doubt a wild stat of the day. Thank you to Buffalo Wild Wings for that. We've got a lot of good stuff to do. We're going to talk to Chris Lemieux about Matthew Stafford. What's going on with the Lions quarterback? Could he eclipse Derek Carr as the new highest paid player in the National Football League? And if he can, the next question is, should he? We'll talk about that as we come right back right here on ESPN Live, by the way, from Highland Meadows and the LPGA Marathon Classic right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
A Bob France extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
We are indeed back here at Highland Meadows for the LPGA 2017 Marathon Classic. Thanks for being with us on this free-for-all Friday. I can tell you this, whoever wins this tournament is going to make a lot of money, but ain't going to be nowhere near what Matthew Stafford is in for. Is he really about to sign a $30 million per year contract extension? That's what the guys over at PrideOfDetroit.com are speculating on right now, and we've got one of them. Chris Lemieux, our good friend, joining us once again right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, to talk a little bit about the Lions as we approach training camp, the starting training camp. How many days away is it, Chris Lemieux?
Coming up pretty soon. I don't have the full thing in front of me. I believe it's like either it's next week or the week
Thursday
after.
I want to say they're Thursday or Friday next week, or if I'm wrong, then it's worst case,
like
it's
that.
The 31st. So I can't believe we're a week away, guys.
So basically a week,
I've been sitting here kind of sitting on this history piece. I need to get it written before training camp comes in, because once it comes in, no one's going to care about me writing about a Lions player from the 1940s.
Well, give us a little tease here. What history? What are you doing?
Well, I'm doing, it's kind of a little bit of the labor history of the NFL. Old player Bill Radovich, I think he served in the Navy in World War II, kind of a bit Hollywood actor, but before that he was also a football player, and he played tackle for the Detroit Lions. And he, long story short, he ended up getting blackballed, because back in those days, you were talking like pre-merger NFL, there were a couple other leagues, and the NFL didn't, like, just kind of like early baseball history, the owners could blackball you if you went to play for one of these leagues. Radovich did that. And he was able to do something not a lot of other players could. He took the NFL to court. He took him all the way to the Supreme Court. Radovich versus National Football League is actually one of the biggest law cases in the history of sports law, and it opened up the NFL to, it basically said, the NFL, you're not allowed, you don't get the same antitrust exemptions that we give to baseball. which allowed something like the AFL and other football leagues to start up, and it forced the NFL to negotiate in time with the NFL Players Association. So it became a union. The lawsuit kind of opened up the way, and it was because of a former Lion, pretty much.
That's very cool. And you're working on that piece for when? When's that deadline?
Well, I mean, I've got a pretty busy weekend in front of me, but hopefully I'm going to have it ready for sometime next week on the site.
Kind of, well, got do a lot us of a things. Favor. Do yeah. us a favor, Chris, if you would. Come on back with us after it gets run. Let us know when it's there. We'll keep checking back anyway, but at prideatdetroit.com. But after you get it written, I'd love to see the details of it, and then we'll come back on and
sure.
talk about it in more depth. Because right now all we can do is say what happened. I don't know the specifics. Once I see them, I'll probably be able to come up with a couple of intelligent questions for you. So that's very cool.
Yeah, it's on me. I've been dragging my feet, but I've had a lot going on in my life. So, I mean, I just moved across country, so it's kind of been a kind of a long, arduous journey.
Understood. Understood, and I've done that a couple of times, so I know what you're talking about. So that's okay.
Yeah,
all right, let's get down to business here. Obviously, they're going to start camp, as we talked about, in about a week, and Matthew Stafford is looking for a contract extension. Everybody has been talking about two names as far as setting the market for Matthew Stafford. One is Kirk Cousins, who's been in a negotiation kind of in and out with the Redskins for a long-term deal for seemingly ever, and it looks like he's going to be a two-straight-year franchise guy, and that's not something he's happy about. He wants his long-term deal. Derek Carr is the other, who signed a five-year, $125 million contract last month. That's 25 million a year average, the highest for any player in NFL history. The new mark for quarterbacks, obviously, as your buddy Jeremy wrote on prideofdetroit.com. And now Jeremy's speculating that for Matthew's deal, he could go up by five and make that $30 million a year on average, not all guaranteed, of course. So my question is do you think it will reach that number, number one? That's part A of the question. It'll be a three-part question, Chris Lemieux. Do you think it'll reach that number one? Number two is, do you think that'll get done here before training camp? And number three is Matthew Stafford worth that contract? And I say that, of course, in the context of NFL money and other quarterbacks.
All right, I'll try to go in order here. So I guess the question is he going to reach $30 million? I kind of disagree with Jeremy here. I think it'll stop a little short of averaging around $30 million. Obviously, we're not talking about a lot of guaranteed money. Like, there'll be plenty of guaranteed money, but that won't all be guaranteed. However, I know Jeremy brought up something. I believe it was Sports Illustrated Albert Breer.
Correct, yeah.
Mentioned 2017, his franchise, Stafford's franchise tag would be about $26.4 million. The total tag him twice would be about $58 million. So that gets it closer to $30 million per year. I kind of see it that it's rough. I think it'll be a little short. I think the Kirk Cousins thing probably hurts him a little bit. But I would say no. The floor for me is averaging $28 million. So we're basically haggling over about a couple billion here, which, I mean, no small dough, but still, it's weird to quibble. I would imagine it's a very small window to end up. What was the second question again?
Second part was, do you think his new extension? Do you think he'll have one before training camp or before the season starts?
Before the season starts, absolutely. Hopefully, before preseason. I know it's a big concern for them. They've been very quiet about it, but it is kind of in their minds, and it's where we've held the Lions to be this whole time. You know, it's where I think we've held Bob Quinn to be, and I don't think – the problem is, of course, we don't get any word about these kind of negotiations. They just kind of drop it in the lap, and it's there. But I would expect to see something probably close to camp, but they're not going to let this – they would be very foolish to let this go past the start of the season, because it would it would open up some questions the Lions don't want to have to answer. And then the final question, is he worth it? I mean,
in the context, of course, comparative
sure.
to the likes of, well, I mean, we could just go with Cousins, who's, you know, still trying to work something out long term. And doesn't seem to have the full respect, obviously, of the Redskins organization. And some people are saying that maybe it's Jay Gruden who, you know, is the one who's telling them, look, he's good,
I
but
mean,
he's not that good for long term. And then Derek Carr, who is, you know, a lot of people thought before he got injured might have actually gone on to win the MVP last year. Those are the two guys that are, you know, kind of setting the market, if you will, right now, or at least trying to. And how does Stafford fit in with that?
I mean, well, let's just start with those guys again, right? Like, Carr, in my mind, is probably the best young quarterback we have right now. I know Dak Prescott has a great rookie year, but, I mean, that's just 1 year under the belt. Carr's been kind of steadily improving, and you've got the future for Oakland, nay, Las Vegas, it set pretty much with Carr. Cousins, I mean, God, D.C. is just such an awful, awful organization sometimes. Like, this is almost expected to happen, that they would somehow find a way to screw this up. And that's kind of the funny thing about Kirk Cousins, is like, okay, this guy came out of nowhere. We didn't expect him to be much. Now he is something. So I don't know, like, it almost feels like a catch-22 for the Redskins, but at the same time, like, I think they're foolish not to basically keep playing chicken at this point. Stafford, though, in my mind, is just absolutely worth it. I mean, we've seen steady progression out of him for several years now. He's exploded pretty much with after last year. And, I mean, a lot of that histrionically has been basically, oh, well, that's Stafford had Calvin Johnson. And I think what 2016 proved to us is, like, no, it wasn't all about Calvin Johnson. Some of it was about Stafford, and much of it is about Stafford. And it's obvious that in several ways you've got to pay out this money, because you want to make a commitment to this guy, and you want to make a commitment to show him that your team is committed to him and his wishes. Like, I know, you know, we talked about this, especially with some of the Calvin Johnson comments that came up lately. It's like, you know, Stafford's now sat under several coaching staffs now. I think only about two, but still, like, it's been up and down when it comes to the front office and the coaching staff for the Lions. And you, by handing him this money, you're basically saying, look, you know, whatever happens is going to at least be stable in this position. You're going to be paid well. You're going to be the main focus here. It's a show of security, really, and it's a show of value. And I know the money can be eye-popping, but it's just kind of it's a lot about a market trying to just assess a value for a position that just seems to be getting more and more valuable and fewer options really available when it comes to young guys. Like, I mean, we mentioned Derek Carr, but the pickings for young quarterbacks after that is really hit and miss. You could end up in some really bad situations if you just decide to blow it up. And, I mean, at this point, if Detroit doesn't give him that money, I think someone will, because it's getting desperate out here for some of these teams for quarterbacks. So I think,
for the sake of comparison, if I can, Chris Lemieux is our guest from PrideInDetroit.com. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Matthew Stafford potentially getting a $30 million per year contract extension, and that would set the bar for quarterbacks and set the bar for the league, quite frankly. For the sake of comparison, Kirk Cousins, again, who's looking for a long-term deal from the Redskins, he's been tagged a couple of times now, so he's making $20-plus million. But his last two seasons, Kirk Cousins, he's thrown for 4,166 and 4,917 yards last year. Touchdown interception, 29-11 2 years ago, 25-12 last year. QB ratings, 101.6 a year ago, or 2 years ago, and 97.2 last year. So two really, really good, consistent seasons starting all 16 games. Derek Carr, who just signed the richest deal ever, $25 million a year. He's had three seasons now as the starter's rookie year. Obviously, is expected to be difficult. But you know what? Rookies in the NFL, unless you're very, very special, you don't put up really good numbers. And he did, 3,200 yards. Mm-hmm. That's not a huge number in today's NFL, but 21 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. Nothing to shake your or to sneeze at as a rook. Then in his second year, upping his yardage to 3,987 on 61% completions, 32 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, 91.1 the QB rating. And then last year, really cranking it up. Another 3,900 yards in only 15 games, 28 touchdowns, interceptions down to 6, and a QB rating of 96. I give you all of that, of course, to give you the backdrop on Matthew Stafford, which you already know, Chris, mm-hmm. but just for those who don't. He has already had six seasons of at least 4,000 yards passing, one over 5,000. His touchdown-to-interception ratio overall in his career is 187-108, and that takes into account 13-20 in his rookie season, 13 touchdowns and 20 picks. He's never had a QB or a quarterback rating over 100. He's been close. 97 was his highest twice. Last year, 93.3. So, again, if you just look at those numbers and compare these three guys, I see a lot of similarity with the exception of the fact that Stafford has been doing it for a long time. And because of that, the consistency factor over the last 6 years, 4,500 yards, or hold on, let me see what was the lowest. Actually, 42. Well, 4,200 yards or higher for six straight years. That, I would think, if I'm his agent, has to be worth something because you know what you're going to get. Whereas with the youngsters, you may get, you know, building on those things they've only done for a couple of seasons.
Right. I think the age thing is a very fascinating thing to consider because, as you say, it is more consistent. Whereas, although, granted, when I look at that Derek Carr contract, I'm like, okay, this is obviously, they are so sure this is going to be their future. And it's such a weird thing to talk about quarterback contracts because, obviously, even when looking at Stafford, like, I think he's one of the top quarterbacks in the league, but he's absolutely not, like, you know, Tom Brady or even Aaron Rodgers, who are going to be making far less than Stafford will. But that's just kind of how this league has kind of progressed when it comes to when these deals get inked and for how much and just ramping up. It just, you know, what was it, a few years ago we were just, 4 years ago it was Joe Flacco was the highest paid guy in the league. And then I think it was Stafford at some point there too. And then he got obliterated by, no, I think it was Andy Dalton. It was Flacco, then Dalton, then Stafford, then someone else.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, if Stafford doesn't hit 30, someone will in time. Right.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. There's no doubt. The question, though, is do the Lions want to be the ones to set that bar? Now, if it keeps him happy, like you said, long term here, I mean, and everything you said in your first commentary, Chris Lemieux, was spot on. I mean, it's getting desperate out there trying to find quality starters, and I mean real starters who can win you games. It's very, very hard to do. We've seen a lot of teams who are begging. And Matthew Stafford has proven to be effective at that. Is he Tom Brady? Is he Aaron Rodgers? Is he, you know, some of the greats and, you know, Drew Brees, et cetera? No, he's not. But he is right there at that next tier down, and you can see why he would do that.
He's obviously worked with less, too, compared to a lot of those guys. He's worked with far less in these years. I mean,
that's
the longest
very
time he had Calvin Johnson, but, I mean, the Lions'
and the
offense.
And no running game to speak
no
of.
Running game, no running game for nearly the entire time he's been there. Offensive line has gone up and down. That 2014 team that went to the postseason, to the playoffs, that was primarily about their defense. This offense has, I mean, I'm trying to remember all of the offense. I mean, he's gone through Scott Linehan, Joe Lombardi, and now Jim Bob Cooter. So he's kind of, he's had to kind of really go through quite a bit here. And it's, I mean, obviously because of the salary cap, you know, more money to him means less that you can spend on some of his weapons around him. But they're obviously telling him, like, look, you're the magic sauce. You're what makes this whole thing go, buddy. You know? So I think in that term, he's absolutely worth it. And yeah, I think that's why the Kirk Cousins deal is so fascinating, because there's a real possibility Washington just botches this thing completely and Kirk Cousins ends up on the open market.
Yeah.
If you want to see an inflated price, just wait to see what's going to happen with Kirk Cousins. Like, see when a team like, I don't know, Buffalo or who else is really missing a quarterback?
The Jets.
Or the Jets suddenly start having to just throw insane amounts of money at Kirk Cousins, who, I mean, as great as he's been in the past couple of years, does anyone think Kirk Cousins is a long-term quarterback in this league? I don't know.
I don't either, and I'll tell you what, you know, given the state of the position, he's going to get a long-term deal from somebody with some really extraordinary money. I had another question for you, but Kush does too,
sure.
And we're short on time, so I'll let Jim take it. Go ahead.
I'll try to be quick with this one, even though I know your answer may not be, Chris. Thinking about this extension and all the deserving, that's not what I'm asking about. What I'm going to ask about is, say the Lions do give him this type of contract that pays him about $30 million a year. What is the trickle-down effect of that for the rest of the Lions' roster and cap situations? Because I'm pretty sure it's not going to leave them with a whole lot else for other things. What would this contract, if it goes down like this, what would it do for the rest of the Lions' cap and player-wise?
I don't have the cap numbers up in front of me right now, but I know the big name after Stafford is going to be Ezekiel Ansah. But I think when it comes to him, you've got a lot more to prove for Ezekiel Ansah. I know he had a great 2015 when the team was in the gutters, but his 2016, you know, marred by injury as it was, he was kind of like, okay, I'm not quite sure what's going on here. So I think 2016 will be a proving ground. He'll obviously have less money when it comes down the pipe, but I mean, push comes to shove, like, you can replace a defensive end in this league. You really can't replace a quarterback. And, you know, Bob Quinn, so far, we've only had two drafts to go on. And I think he's been drafted, I mean, decently well. So you've just got to trust that if you're going to throw a lot of money at Stafford, you can afford to let a guy walk here and there and still be able to, you know, pick up some steals either from, you know, bargain bin free agency or from the draft. I'm not going to I think Theo Riddick just got an extension, too. So I think the big one on my radar is just watching out for Ezekiel Ansah. And again, like, they'll have a little less to work with, but I'm not going to worry too much about it. I mean, the cap will probably grow in time, and I think there's some more money coming down the books too. I know they've had this DeAndre Levy money that just came off this month and was kind of put back into the cap, so they've got that to play with.
Last thing, Chris, I do want to squeeze my last one, and even though it is 4 o'clock, do you think that the request for the $30 million number to get there, and you know, you said quibbling or haggling over $2 million if it's up at 58, you know, his double cap number for 2 years. Do you think that is going to be pushed because of the very, very open complaints by a number of NFL players and agents about how much they're getting paid relative to what the NBA guys are getting? They're setting all these new records, $40 million a year for Steph Curry, then Harden signs, what the hell was his? 4 years and 100, I can't remember exactly what his number was now, his extension. But he's got a bunch of guys getting $35, $40 million a year. LeBron, after next season, will probably push 50 or something stupid. Giancarlo Stanton's making $30-some million dollars a year in baseball. A lot of people think Harper's going to be the first, first $400 million contract, Bryce Harper. So NFL players are feeling very, very underpaid and undervalued. I'm wondering if you think they're going to push for this number just because they've got to, you know, they're trying to achieve something here and put themselves on par with some of the other guys.
I think that's a real possibility. I'm still looking into some of the labor situation. I can tell you this, like, yeah, I think that is. I have heard that in some guys looking at the NBA and thinking, like, man, these guys are making so much money. And, you know, and then when you look at baseball, it's like, wow, these guys, they're making a ton of money and their contracts are guaranteed. That's something. So I think part of this is just the situation with contracts in the NFL is untenable. This and with the salary cap too. This league makes an insane amount of money, just more money than the other leagues when it comes down to it. But on the flip side, they've also got to pay more players. There's 53 men on the final rosters, not counting, you know, what you got to pay out for all this, the fees for the 90 man before preseason cuts. So I think, look, like, when we come to the next CBA, I don't know when that's going to come down now, but I think the NFL really and the NFLPA have a lot of hard answers and most to confront, and most of those answers are going to be geared towards the players. And if labor history has shown us anything, is that owners do not like giving their workers more money unless by force. So I don't know where it's going to go because, I mean, this is the only sport right now in North America, like, that has most of their contracts unguaranteed. Like, the amount of guaranteed money versus unguaranteed is insane, especially when you look at basketball or baseball. And, yeah, like, you're seeing the NBA throwing out a ton of money. Now, obviously, they have something like, you know, the player max, which is another problem to deal with over there when it comes to their value. And, of course, baseball doesn't have a salary cap. But I think we need to reevaluate the salary cap, which is not – a lot of people get the impression that the salary cap is there to level the playing field, and it's really more to prevent the owners from spending too much. Like, that salary cap – can be raised significantly, and it won't have a negative effect on the equal playing field between the 32 teams in my vision. Like I think, but again, these are hard truths for the owners to try to embrace. And until we get to that point, you're going to see more teams look at their key players and be like, okay, these guys have put a lot of pressure on us. We've got to pay them this amount of money. And, yeah, maybe a few teams get hobbled by that. Maybe a few teams make bad deals. I mean, God, no one stopped the Washington from signing the Albert Haynesworth deals in the past. But I think it's something that the league as a whole is going to have to reckon with very soon, because the players are getting very anxious about this. It's basically like, we're making less money, there's more of us, and we are not guaranteed to a good chunk of that money, and this game hurts more than any other sport out there.
Yep.
And our careers can be cut short in a heartbeat, unlike anything else out there. And you, NFL, are making a ton of money. So where's the disconnect? And how do we solve this?
It's a great point, Chris. Hey, Chris, we're out of time, my friend. We're way past it. But thanks for your analysis. Great work. Tell your buddy Jeremy, great work on PrideOfDetroit.com for keeping us up to date on that. And talk to us next week once you get the history piece done. That'll be fun.
Will do. All right. Take care, man.
Thank you, Chris. Chris Lemieux joining us here as we wrap up hour number one with a reminder that if you are watching the game from your couch, then you need to be on your app, the app for the B-Dubs Party Menu. That's right. Buffalo Wild Wings' new app. You need to download it so that you can customize your orders and order and save your favorites. You always know what you want. It's right there for you. Schedule your pickup time. That is the great thing about the B-Dubs Party Menu. If you're hosting a watch party for a game or a fight or an event, my goodness, the best way to be a great host is to get Buffalo Wild Wings' takeout menu on your app. So download that app to your smartphone, and also do it quickly so that you can take advantage of the barbecue pork grilled cheese, which is there for a limited time only. It is amazing. And also the Buffalo Loaded Tots. You're going to love the Buffalo Wild Wings party menu, the takeout menu, and the free downloadable app for your smartphone. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. And we're back with hour number two. And who wants to be traded from where? A shocking development in the NBA, literally within the last 10 minutes. We'll tell you all about it on the other side, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Mr. Simpson, I do vote to grant parole when eligible, and that will conclude this hearing.
Thank you. I've always thought I've been pretty good with people, and I basically have spent a conflict-free life. I'm not a guy that ever got into fights on the street and with the public and everybody. I'm not a guy who lived a criminal life. You know, I'm a pretty straight shooter. I've always tried to be a good soldier. I wish this would have never happened. I apologize to him at my sentencing. There's nothing I can do about this kind of media circus that's going on right now, but I could do something about the whole thing in the beginning. If I would have made a better judgment, none of this would have happened, and I take full responsibility. I mean, I could easily stay in Nevada, but I don't think you guys want me here. I'm no danger to pull a gun on anybody. You know, I never have in my life. I've never been accused of it in my life. Nobody's ever accused me of pulling any weapon on them.
The way he kept talking, long-windedness, which everybody will tell you is exactly what you're not supposed to do, it indicated to me, and we don't want to extrapolate too much based on, you know, 45 minutes of testimony, a guy who felt he could still charm anyone, he could still convince anyone, you know, the guy who sat down and without a lawyer, talked to the police right after the murders because he figured, I'm OJ.
Right.
All righty, good evening and welcome to the Friday Night Drive Time. I am Joe Rogowski.
So I wonder, what would it be like to actually strap on the pads and, well?
Hey, Joe, you think you can play golf for Toledo Storm? Try this.
That sounds like fun.
Just walking around in this stuff is heavy. This gear is so heavy.
Finally, it's time to take to the ice.
Here I go, ready or not. Ready or not, I'm ready to play goalie.
Yeah, don't kill me with power shots. My problem is I'm not very mobile. And I'm not mobile, and I'm not very good. Help! Help!
The Zamboni? Well, he's got a point. I have driven go-karts. Golf carts.
Hold down!
Lawnmowers. And even the news van. But a Zamboni?
Nothing like driving a Zamboni. I've got a new vehicle.
It's called street soccer or international freestyle. I don't quite know the moves, but after a week of camp, I'll be an expert like the rest of them.
Give me a slow, thin, pyrrhic softball pitch so I can hit. That's it. Right there.
I actually hurt my knee on that slide. My lawyers will be contacting Owen shortly. Ah, just kidding, ladies. Great season so far. Keep it up.
Joe Rakowski, Fox Toledo News.
Joe Rakowski, Toledo 11 News Channel.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed it is, as we continue live here at the LPGA Marathon Classic 2017 style. And my goodness, what a gorgeous day, what a gorgeous event out here, as always, in Sylvania. So glad you could be with us for hour number two of this free-for-all Friday. And Kush, my goodness, do we have a lot of news to talk about.
Oh, man.
You heard a lot in the montage there. Obviously, you heard a little bit of the terrible, sad, tragic passing of Joe Ricknosi. And I should take that back, because the montage was filled with the celebration of the life and the career of Joe Ricknosi, a Toledo media legend who just had friends from one end of Northwest Ohio to the other. And anybody who's ever heard him on the air or known him and talked to him off the air would agree with that. And by the way, Kush, there's a little sign that is hanging up at the front of the media tent where I am right now at the Marathon Classic that says Joe Ricknosi, 1968 to 2017, RIP. So obviously everybody here feels it as well. So I wanted to make sure to get that out there, because it's the most important thing as we share our condolences and prayers and best thoughts of comfort with Joe's family and friends and those who knew him well. You also heard from the parole hearing yesterday with O.J. Simpson, but we're going to get past all of that right now, because Kush, the big news that literally broke in our last half hour conversation while we were having our conversation with Chris Lemieux. It looks like Kyrie Irving has said, I've had just about enough of playing in the shadow of LeBron James. I'm looking to grow into the kind of player that I can be, the leader I can be, rather than just the sidekick that LeBron James needs to have playing with him. Headline from Brian Windhorst. There have been three headlines, Kush, and I find that very, very curious within the last 10 minutes on ESPN.com. One, sources. Irving asks Cavaliers to trade him. Two, Irving requesting trade out of Cleveland to find bigger role. Third headline I've seen, and they've all changed, the third headline I've seen in the last 10 minutes is Irving requesting trade to evade LeBron. That's the strongest one. Requesting a trade to evade LeBron, meaning to get out of the shadow. Reading from the column or the article by Brian Windhorst, ESPN senior writer, Kyrie Irving is ready to end his run with the Cavaliers, as league sources told ESPN that the guard has asked the team to trade him. The request came last week and was made to Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert. Irving has expressed that he wants to play in a situation where he can be more of a focal point and that he no longer wants to play alongside LeBron James, sources said. His agent, Jeff Wexler, would not confirm or deny whether he has asked for a trade. He did say, quote, Kyrie and I had a meeting with Cavs leadership where we discussed many different scenarios in reference to Kyrie and his future with the team. This is what Wexler told ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. And by the way, we did get confirmation on that pronunciation. The basis, because I got yelled at by Mike Golic. I did, because I tweeted to Golic, who was on TV, saying that it's Wojnarowski, and I looked at the spelling, and I said, no, it can't be. And I spelled it out phonetically to Golic, and I said, if you read it, it says Wojnarowski. Where are you getting this from? And he tweeted back to me, goes, from him? I'm like, okay, so case over, or case closed. He wants to pronounce it how it's not spelled. I guess he can do that. I signed it Bob, pronounced Beeb, because just to make the point. Anyway, the basis of these discussions, says Wojnarowski, and what went on in those discussions are between the Cavs and us. We respectfully are going to keep them private. Now, we all know that the Cavaliers parted ways with David Griffin last month. They're running right now without a rudder. This is a ship without a rudder. They don't have a GM making decisions. They have Dan Gilbert, the owner. They have a couple of, like, assistant GMs and front office types who are kind of pooling their resources and putting their heads together. But nobody is the decision maker other than Gilbert himself. And perhaps that's why, Jim, Kyrie Irving told Sports Illustrated just a few days ago that the Cavaliers are in a, quote, very peculiar place. I understand we're in a very peculiar place, he said. We just have to, you know, make sure all the pieces are aligned first, and then we go from there. It's the summertime, and there's a lot of craziness going on in the NBA, end quote. You'll notice in none of the conversation that he had with SI about the peculiar place, did he say that we will figure it out and compete again for a championship. He didn't express in any way that me and Kev and LeBron were all on the same page, but the team's got to figure out, you know, what direction they're going to go here. He didn't say anything of the sort. He just said there's a lot of craziness going on in the summertime in the NBA. Well, now here we are. 2 days later, he has added to that craziness. Now, according to, again, Brian Windhorst, Adrian Wojnarowski, and others, that he has indeed asked for a trade so that he can get away from the shadow of LeBron James and play a bigger role, a championship-caliber role on a championship-caliber team. My goodness gracious, where do we go from here? Kush, thoughts?
First thought to add on to that, Adrian Wojnarowski then tweeting a couple of minutes ago that according to sources in that meeting where this apparently came up in that Kyrie asked for a trade, he even raised specifically the Spurs in that trade, which if the storyline is he wants to be the focal point, then I don't know why you go to San Antonio. Do you think Pop is really going to give Kyrie the focal point out, over Kawhi? I rather doubt it.
Yeah, I would too, with the possible caveat there, Jim, being that Kawhi Leonard is not that LeBron, KD, Westbrook, dynamic alpha male personality. He was never that way. At least in the first few years in the league. Now, maybe it's because he deferred to Tim Duncan and maybe even to some extent deferred to Tony Parker based on his veteran experience there and his role with that team. He doesn't strike me as an alpha male, I have to be the big dog that eats first kind of a guy. It's possible that if Kyrie wants to be the primary scoring option, you have to find a guy who is an all-around player who doesn't judge his own worth by shots taken, points scored. A guy who's been a two-time NBA Defensive Player of the Year, a guy who has been a two-way player, a guy who doesn't necessarily, when's the last time you heard Kawhi Leonard speak? I don't even know if I'd recognize his voice if you played a clip for us right
now. No kidding, right?
Right? I mean, seriously. I would know Durant's voice. I would know Curry's voice. I would know LeBron's voice. I would know Kyrie's voice. I would know Westbrook's voice. I would know, I might not know Paul George's voice. But I don't know that I could recognize Kawhi because he doesn't talk. He's not that guy. Look at
right.
me, watch me. He's team first, victories first. I want to win a championship. I want to get Golden State. If Kawhi feels, and if Popovich feels, that a scoring point guard like Kyrie would be the best way to complement Kawhi, or for Kawhi to complement a score like that, you don't have to. Because think about it, Jim. Right now, the second best scoring option for the San Antonio Spurs is LaMarcus Aldridge, who had a horrific playoff and
right.
really doesn't seem to fit extraordinarily well there, as much as, you know, the all-star that he was in Portland before he came to San Antonio, as much as people thought he would. They need scoring. You know, Manu Ginobili, you know, may be back for another year, but it's, of course, a very limited off-the-bench role, and I don't know if he is coming back. Did he make a decision for sure yet that Ginobili is done? I don't even know for sure. I know that Popovich started him in the last game of the year in the event that this was goodbye.
Right.
It was just a tribute to him. Here we go. He's coming back.
Okay.
Well, I have a headline here from 5 hours ago. Manu Ginobili, Greg Popovich said he needed me to return to the Spurs. So I'm assuming that means that I'm going to do it because he said he needed me. So we'll see. Yeah, it is. Manu Ginobili on his return. It's an honor to be a part of this Spurs, so it sounds like he's back. But anyway, he's a piece now. He's not a focal guy. He was always a piece, but he's less of a piece at his age. I don't know. I can see them saying, look, we need points. We need points and ways to pressure Golden State if we want to catch them in the West. I could see Kyrie Irving. Remember, what are we talking about? We're talking about a league in which three or four stars are necessary to win a championship. Three or four are necessary. Durant, Curry, and Thompson make up three, and depending on your opinion of Green, that makes up four. San Antonio doesn't have three. They have maybe one and a half, depending on how Aldridge is playing. They need another superstar. And if they give Kyrie deference, if they defer to him, you know, if they tell him, you know, come and play with us, and Pop is such a great manager of guys, I could see Kawhi Leonard being okay with that, and I could see Kyrie being okay with that. I could see something like that happening, because Kyrie isn't going to say, I want to get out of here and be the focal point on a team that's going to win 35 games and miss the playoffs, or 25 games, you know, the way he did, you know, when he was drafted and LeBron was gone. He doesn't want to go to a crap team and just score 30 points a game. He wants to score a bunch of points and win, you know, compete for championships. That's a fascinating possibility, that especially with Parker being down. A lot of people, you know, going down and injured now and again older. A lot of people thought Chris Paul might be the perfect fit to replace him in San Antonio. Instead, Chris Paul goes to the Rockets, and now they got Paul and Harden. I could totally see the Spurs saying, let's talk, Cleveland. Let's see what kind of trade could be worked out. Maybe, I don't know. I don't want to speculate on who it could be, but I could see something like that happening. I'm just riffing here,
yeah,
because this is all brand news and breaking in
right
front of our very eyes. But
and
go ahead.
The way it's been, the news has been breaking and everything, the thing that keeps going then through my head is, if you're the Cavs, and by in this case we mean Gilbert, because of, you know, the whole front office thing.
Yeah.
It now, unfortunately, opens a legit question. Should the Cavs keep trying? Maybe this Derrick Rose thing, assuming no injuries, they'll still, with the team currently constructed, be the favorites, as we know, in the Eastern Conference. And then it's what happens against the Warriors. They'll be vast underdogs. We've discussed that.
Yeah.
But the other option with things like this coming out now, because we kind of speculated that, you know, if LeBron were to leave next summer, that you know, maybe you should then trade a Kyrie or something like that. But it means I have to throw out this question with all seriousness.
Okay.
Do you just say screw it and blow it up now? And by blow it up now, I mean up to and including trading LeBron James. Because do you really want to have stuff going through this drama-filled locker room for a whole season? Because that's what we're now in store for.
I would say this about that. If Gilbert and LeBron sit down in a room together and decide we can make another run at it even without Kyrie, maybe they go ahead and offer a real contract, not just a minimum contract, to a Derrick Rose to replace Kyrie if they trade him. You got to get value back for Kyrie, obviously. It's not, you know, and it's got to be money for money. You know what kind of money he makes. So you're going to have to get some serious players back from whoever it is. And depending on that talent mixing with LeBron, you kept Kevin Love. You did not make the Paul George move. You've added a little bit of depth in Calderon and all of this stuff going on. If you get real talent back and not just money off the books back for Kyrie, and LeBron says, I think I can win with this, I think we can go back to the finals with this, then you do it one more run. If LeBron says, you know what, if Kyrie's out, I'm out too, as soon as the year's over, and just makes his announcement like Paul George did, I'm out, then, of course, Dan Gilbert's got to say, okay, we got to move him. We got to move him. Don't let him walk for nothing. Let's trade LeBron to the, I don't know, to the Lakers if that's where he wants to go, and bring back Brandon Ingram and who knows what, Julius Randle, who knows what else they might ask for. But yeah, I think it would have to be a real heart-to-heart between Gilbert and LeBron, and I don't know how much they talk, to be quite frank.
As far as we all know, next to nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we do know that LeBron was very, very upset by, at least according to him, he was very upset by the non-deal for Griffin to come back. If that's still a point of contention between him and Gilbert, then maybe they're not going to be able to have a heart-to-heart. But I think if they sit down and talk to one another and decide they can make a run with whatever they get back for Kyrie, then maybe he sticks around one more year and they do it. But
How's this for a twist?
But other than that, yeah, you got to consider moving them.
Yeah, and how about this? Because this whole story is still new, so the twists are just going to keep coming. This is in Brian Windhorst's latest report on these things.
Yeah.
Source told ESPN's Dave McMenamin, Irving gave the Cavs a list of teams that he'd be willing to be traded to. Among those teams on the list were the Knicks. So I'm going to go out and throw this question out. And it's weird to have to say that these are serious questions now.
I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Do you trade him to the Knicks for Melo?
He
gets to be the focal point in New York, if that would be the case. But we know about the Mello side of things.
And
I
if
wouldn't
that's
be
the
happy
case,
about that, but does do you open that door now?
It would really, really change my opinion of Kyrie Irving if that was true. Because that would indicate he doesn't care about winning. He just wants to play and score and be the guy.
And unlike Mello, you know, Kyrie already has at least a ring. So.
Yeah, he does. But still, he look how young he is. He's 25. Yeah. Does he want to go to New York, which is horrible, which is like Cleveland without a runner? Because once they fired Phil Jackson, I mean, they still don't have an official general manager.
That's true.
Does he want to go there and play for just a horrible, horrible team just to make money and score points and be the guy? Now, remember, Kyrie is a marketing master. Kyrie, the Uncle Drew Pepsi phenomenon, I mean, that's built on Madison Avenue in New York. That is a kind of place where I think he would like to be for that purpose.
Oh, yeah, marketing-wise,
he likes Broadway
that'd be the
lights.
Perfect type of place.
He likes
it,
the Broadway lights. He likes the the marketing exposure that he can get there in a place like New York. So I could see that. What other teams were on that list, or did they not give them all?
They haven't given them all. Clearly, based on other reports, the Spurs are another team on that list. So out of the list, the alleged list, and this is ESPN's Dave McMiniman, the Cavs are a reporter for ESPN mentioning this. The only two teams mentioned by name so far are the Spurs and Knicks. I'm not sure what else is on that list, though, and I don't think anybody else is really clear on that either.
What would you say if he told the Cavs he wanted to take his talents to South Beach and go play for the Heat? That would be something.
Well, at least you'd know it ahead of time so you could trade it for whatever any value that comes from the Heat, and it wouldn't be a draft pick sign and trade, which is what they, of course, had to do with LeBron.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Boy, the news just coming at us fast and furious. We're trying to make as much sense of this as we can. We're supposed to talk baseball next segment after the bottom of the hour here. But this is just groundbreaking, earth-shaking, oh, my God, did you hear about it news. If you just turned on your radio, the Cleveland Cavaliers all-star point guard Kyrie Irving has reportedly told the Cleveland Cavaliers that he would like to be traded, according to Brian Windhorst of ESPN, because he wants a bigger role. Wherever he goes, he doesn't want to be in the shadow of a LeBron James. He feels like he is outgrown. And you know what? He might be right. He feels like he has outgrown the sidekick role, the second member of a big three. He wants to be the big member, the first member of a big three someplace else. And so that's where we are. He wants to find a bigger role, according to multiple reports from Yahoo Sports, from ESPN, from Adrian Wojnarowski, from Dave McMenamin, as you just said, from Brian Windhorst, and a couple of team names thrown out there. Just to recap what Jim was telling us, the Spurs, a possible trade partner perhaps, and that Kyrie has given them a couple of names of teams he would not be mind being traded to. Not mind being traded to, including the New York Knicks. Yes, sir.
And by the way, for those, and I've already heard, seen a few comments from people and tweets from people as I've been scanning things in these last 45 minutes on this, saying, oh, so it's kind of like, Paul George, so you got to find a way to trade. No, actually it's not, because the Cavs should blatantly get more than what the Pacers would have gotten in a Paul George trade, on the grounds that Kyrie still has a couple more years under contract. So
that is
so
correct.
Keep that in the back of everybody's head as this story obviously unfolds and develops. The Cavs should, in theory, get more than the Pacers got for George. Not about talent, but about contract length. And Kyrie is signed for a few more years. Teams like that kind of thing.
Jim, Bleacher Report is citing ESPN as saying, and I said it almost in jest a couple of minutes ago, that Kyrie has named the Knicks, the Heat, which I was joking about, the Spurs, and the T-Wolves as teams that he would agree to be traded for, or traded to, I should say. That is extraordinarily interesting.
The Minnesota one's the most interesting. By the way.
Yeah, that's the one. That's what I'm talking about. With Karl Anthony Towns, who is evolving into a superstar. Not a star, a superstar. A 25-12 guy last year. Wiggins is about to get a max contract. And who am I missing? Who did they just get?
Butler.
Jimmy Butler. Now you've got a almost four-star team that it takes to compete, as we said, in a four-star
And the Timberwolves are a type of team with, and the Timberwolves are the type of team with assets because they haven't, you know, until now, they haven't signed a lot of guys or whatnot because they've been, you know, awful. But yeah, side note on that, the fact that the Timberwolves are even on the list shows how much they've risen and how great of an offseason they've had, by the by.
Oh, yeah. They've had as terrible as the Cavs offseason has been, that's how good.
Somebody gave them a B, and I one of the shows where they're great NBA offseason, somebody gave the Timberwolves a B, and I'm looking at it thinking, are you crazy? They get an A for everything they did. It's the Timberwolves, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's incredible what they have done. And Paul Pierce, by the way, the headline on ESPN.com right now, Paul Pierce gives the Cavs an F for their offseason, and very good reasons why. All right, listen, we're going to get a quick time out here, but not before I remind you, if you have not made your summer vacation plans, you got to get to the website. Hit up 1065theticket.com right now for a chance. You can register to win a $1,000 gift certificate from American Airlines, good toward two round-trip tickets departing from Toledo Express via Charlotte, North Carolina, then on to anywhere in the continental United States. From Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Register one time at 1065theticket.com. Let's get the bottom of the hour timeout. We'll come back and talk a little bit of MLB. Chris Cotillo, who's an MLB writer for SB Nation, is going to join us to talk a little bit more about the trade deadline, which is now 10 days away. It's technically less than 10. Because it is July 31st. J.D. Martinez has already moved. We'll talk about other possible trades that might be made coming up here with Chris Cotillo. But we will also keep you updated on the breaking news that Kyrie Irving has requested a trade from the Cavaliers and has already named some teams he would prefer to be traded to. We'll get your thoughts on that, and we'll give you everything that we've got as well right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, my goodness gracious. News breaking fast and furious. We are live. I am live. Anyway, Jim Cushion is back at our home base, but I am live here at Highland Meadows in Sylvania for the LPGA 2017 Marathon Classic. And very interesting development here as far as that goes. Lydia Ko, the two-time champion and the defending champion, could be in danger. She's even through 11 holes today. She's 2-under on the day, was 2-over yesterday. So she's even right now. And the cut line kind of figures to be, as Jim and I were just talking about, right around even par. So if the defending champion wants to defend her championship, she's going to have to get herself at least one or two shots better in the remaining seven holes that she has just to be safe from what could be a very precarious cut line. So we'll keep you posted on that as best we can as we continue from the Classic. We're also updating you on the NBA news that Kyrie Irving, the all-star point guard, Uncle Drew himself, has requested a trade, according to multiple media reports, from the Cleveland Cavaliers in order to get away from LeBron James. Not necessarily a personal thing, as much as, according to the reports, he wants an expanded role. He wants a leadership role. Essentially, he's tired of being the sidekick. He wants to be the big dog who leads the pack on a team.
And by yes. By the way, it's not just Bleacher Report. Now I'm seeing it on ESPN that multiple sources are now saying it's New York, Miami, San Antonio, Minnesota, the teams that Kyrie Irving apparently gave. So it's more now than just Bleacher Report on that front.
Yeah, and so it seems like there's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And most of these stories, I think if they're repeating one another, would tend to be true. And I can see some of those. The Knicks one doesn't make any sense to me, with the exception of it's Broadway. You know, he likes the endorsements. He likes the show. He's Uncle Drew. I could see him wanting to play in New York for that aspect. From a competitive standpoint, why would you want to go from a championship team that won one 2 years ago, that has been to three straight finals, to a team that is probably going to lose 50 games? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But the other ones do. T-Wolves would be just dynamic with a Kyrie at the one, a Butler at the two, a Wiggins at the three, and a Karl Anthony Towns at the four.
Gosh, you look at that. If that's their lineup, they should be 4 or 5 in the West, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah, easily. I mean, that's a dangerous, dangerous team, no question about it, if they were to do that. I can also see him running with Kawhi and the Spurs, who, as we recall, had a lead, a 25-point lead in Game 1 of the conference finals against against Golden State before Kawhi went down with that ankle injury after Pachulia. They're an improved team by in a big way with a Kyrie Irving addition. And I could see Kawhi Leonard deferring a little bit to Kawhi if he wants that first role. He's okay to do that. It would be a very interesting thing out there in the West. And what was the other one? Miami doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Why would you want to stay in the East? They're better than the Knicks, no doubt about that, but I would have to look a little bit more at the dynamics of that before I could comment on it. All right, apologies to Chris Cotillo. We want to get to Chris because we expected to be talking baseball trades today as we're 10 days away from the trading deadline. But we just got hit by this Kyrie story within the last hour. So, Chris, sorry for the delay in getting you on the air, but thank you for joining us from SB Nation. Chris Cotillo, Major League Baseball writer. Thanks for joining us today right here on The Ticket, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, Cavs fans, you didn't even want Kyrie anyway. He went to Duke, so that's all I have.
Are you a North Carolina grad?
I'm a rising senior at UNC. So.
Okay, I didn't realize that. Wow, that's hilarious. Good stuff. Yeah, but he only played 11 games for Duke, so he can't be that bad, right?
Now, once a Dukie, always a Dukie, though. That's the problem.
Fair enough. Appreciate that little quip. Okay, let's get to a little bit of the news as far as baseball goes. Chris Cotillo from SB Nation. As it pertains to the teams that we're interested in here the most, of course, in Toledo, home of the Mud Hens, we watch the Tigers and we watch the Indians very closely as well. J.D. Martinez went away. What do you expect the next move to be for Al Avila and the Tigers? Who is the next guy, do you think, to be pushed out the door for prospects?
It looks like it's going to be his son, and that's obviously a really awkward situation to trade your kid, but I think that's kind of the reality they have to face. And I think, you know, the Cubs are really interested in Alex Avila. There's probably a few other teams probably get a couple prospects back after his resurgence season. And I always think, as long as his dad's there, there's always going to be the chance that he re-signs there, you know, during the winter. We've seen that. We've seen him go back to the Tigers after spending a year with the White Sox. We could always see that kind of thing happening again. I think Alex probably understands, you know, what his dad's job is and that it's to help the organization. So he's probably next. And then, you know, the relief market's starting to develop a little bit. We've seen a couple moves with that Doolittle and Madsen trade. And then we've seen, obviously, David Phelps go and David Robertson and Canely the other day. But Justin Wilson's one of the really high-end guys out there, along with Zach Britton, along with Tony Watson maybe in Pittsburgh, though he's probably not available. So Wilson, Brad Hand, and Britton are really the three guys that are really out there. So I think Wilson is probably likely to move at some point before the deadline, but maybe on the later side of things, I'd say Avila is probably next.
We're asking everybody that we talk to about this, Chris Cotillo of SB Nation, about Justin Verlander and the odds that he has moved. He's got a very, very large contract, a ton of money still owed to him, and he's in his approaching his mid-30s now, and he's not having this kind of year he had a year ago. What's his value, and what kind of interest is there for him?
Yeah, there seems to be, you know, a lot of kind of conflicting reports on that between, you know, this team has interest, though they're backing off a little bit. This team has interest, no, they don't. That kind of stuff going on. So I think in my mind, I'd still put the chances of a deal to be pretty low at this point. I think there's just way too much going on. We're 10 days out, and teams have kind of feelers everywhere on a lot of different things. And there's a lot easier deals to be made out there. With Verlander, you have to, you know, figure out the money side of things, which is a complicating factor. You have to figure out how that money offsets the prospects, and then you have to decide, you know, how much value you're going to get in prospects, how much value you're going to get money-wise, and then there's the obstacle of him approving the deal after all of it. So there's just kind of a lot of obstacles that are going on there, and I think probably relatively unlikely that he's dealt. So there's a few teams, the Brewers, obviously, the Cubs that have been linked. I'd still say relatively not likely to happen. Wilson and Avila are really the guys that should move. JD was a lock to be moved, and he was. So, but Verlander, the rumors will kind of keep going, but maybe over the winter, I'd say, but probably not in the next 10 days.
What I find fascinating, Chris, is looking at two different stories on SB Nation right now on this issue. You mentioned the Brewers potentially being interested in a Verlander, and then one of your other colleagues, Grant Brisby, writing about Yu Darvish potentially to the Cubs. Very interesting moves there in the National League Central if things like that are real. Cubs have have been resurgent since the All-Star break, narrowed that lead that the Brewers had on them at the break. So look at, you know, each of them looking perhaps to add a very, very big-time starter to their rotations.
Yeah, I think the more realistic option for the Brewers would be Sonny Gray. I think they're, you know, being aggressive on him. They've been aggressive on Justin Wilson, trying to make some upgrades. The Brewers are being, you know, not a move yet, but more aggressive than I thought they'd be on the trade market, you know, still with that one game lead. But they're trending in the wrong direction. They've lost their last five. The Cubs have won their last six, and don't look, you know, it's so surprising. The Pirates have won their last five and are only three games out within striking distance. So Milwaukee, for them, I think, you know, they have to be measured because they don't want to give up too much in the farm system for a move that's just going to help this season. They're going to be in uncontrollable guys. The Darvish thing is very interesting because he immediately becomes the best, you know, maybe the best player overall available, if not the best rental player available. If he is made available by the Rangers, they were right on the fence of buying and selling, and all of a sudden have lost, I believe, five in a row and heading to Tampa, a good team tonight, which is really, really tough for them because they all of a sudden have, you know, Luke Roy and Darvish and some of these other guys they could move. Darvish is a free agent at year's end. They've tried to extend him, and they really are going to be, even if they do trade him, a candidate to sign him over the winter. But if they make him available, they're able to get a haul. Just comes down to, do the Cubs have enough prospects to deal for him? And after trading two big-time prospects for Quintana, they don't really have a ton in that system, and I don't know if they can get that done.
We're talking to Chris Cotillo of MLB, or excuse me, of SBNation.com. He's an MLB writer and contributor there. Real quick on the Cleveland Indians. There was word that the Indians had conversations with the Tigers prior to the deal with the Diamondbacks for J.D. Martinez. So they're interested, apparently, in improving their lineup. And the way they hit or didn't hit to start the second half out in Oakland and San Francisco, you can see why. But the other thing everybody is wondering is, well, how are they going to solidify that rotation? They don't know what they're going to get from Trevor Bauer on a nightly basis. They don't know what they're going to get from Josh Tomlin either. Danny Salazar is going to make a start tonight. So they're looking probably for an arm as well. Do you see anything out there on the horizon for them?
Yeah, they're kind of quietly lurking in the background of everything. I think the Martinez, what I've read about and heard about his, their interest in JD was, you know, he was kind of a dynamic bat that was better than any other option. It would come at a lower acquisition cost for what you're getting. As you saw, you know, Tigers fans aren't going to like hearing this, but basically everybody in baseball said, wow, that's a pretty lousy haul that they got for JD, you know, from Arizona, three minor league shortstops far away, and none of them really high-end prospects. Cleveland, if they were, you know, any team looking for offense is obviously going to be in on that kind of player at that price, I think. That's probably a special case. I don't know if they're really going to go hard for another bat just because, you know, there's no one that's going to be that kind of perfect storm of factors just like JD was. I think in the rotation piece, I think they're an interesting team to look for on Sonny Gray. They've been doing background work on him and some of the other pitchers that are available. We're about to see some teams in that division start making moves. The White Sox have been active as sellers. Detroit's been active as sellers. But Kansas City and Minnesota, the teams that are in that mix, they're really going to start making moves and potentially push the Indians into doing the same. Minnesota, it changes literally every 10 seconds, but they, as of last night, were closing in on a deal for Jaime Garcia. I don't know if it's still alive, but not close anymore, according to people I've talked to today. And that means that they're going to be, you know, looking at the market again. I think the Royals, if that Garcia deal with Minnesota falls apart, are a great spot for Garcia. They're a great spot for Lance Lynn or maybe even Darvish, even though they probably don't have the prospects to get that done. So they're going to be aggressive in that division and maybe push Cleveland to make a move, but I still think Cleveland is a class of that group, and especially if they can add an arm like Sonny Gray or someone like that, then they become just even more of a favorite in my mind.
Chris Cotillo joining us from SB Nation, MLB writer, and Jim Cushion's got the final one for you. Jimmy, go ahead.
And based on what we have seen so far, you know, Quintana and J.D. Martinez and Todd Frazier and the bullpen guys to the Yankees, a couple bullpen guys from Oakland to Washington, out of who's left and kind of based on sort of what we're seeing with the rumors and everything right now, I know we have some a couple days left, obviously. Who, in your opinion, Chris, is the next guy that's going to end up getting moved? Specifically,
it's tough. I think it's you know, you've seen kind of a weird divide this year where you have a lot of these teams. If a team is a known seller, then they're a known seller and they're going for it and they're saying we're not going to wait till the 31st. You've seen that in the AL. The three sellers, Detroit, the White Sox, and Oakland, have all sold pieces, as we've seen those big pieces in Quintana and JD. And now in the National League, we've seen Miami made their first sale move yesterday. David Phelps goes to the Mariners. But then there's those teams that are sitting on the fence, the Angels, the Rangers, you know, the Cardinals are an interesting one. They made an interesting move today with trading Marco Gonzalez to Seattle for Tyler O'Neill. those teams that are right kind of on the edge of buying and selling might give you a second wave closer to the 31st, and that's when guys like, you know, Darvish or Lucroy and some of those other pieces, some guys like, you know, Escobar and Anaheim, to get going. I think right now, though, the focus just far and wide is Sonny Gray in Oakland. Maybe a secondary guy in Oakland is Yonder Alonso. I think the whole everything is kind of focused on Gray. The guys that were most likely to be traded before all this were JD, Quintana, and Gray, and now we've seen two of those three come off. So I don't know if anything's close there. It doesn't seem like there is specifically at this moment, but he's the guy that's going to make the headlines at least for the next couple of days and until some of these other teams, and whether guys like Darvish become available or not, it's Gray right now.
Chris Cotillo joining us with a little bit of ML talk as we are now 9 days technically away because it will be on the, 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock on the 31st? Chris,
4 o'clock, 4 o'clock Eastern, yeah.
4 o'clock Eastern is when it will be, so roughly 9 days away from the trading deadline. Chris, thanks for your insight on this. And, again, we apologize for getting to you late. The Kyrie Irving story broke literally in the last 45 minutes. So thanks for sticking with us. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks.
All right, you got it, my friend. Thanks very much. All right, it's 4:56. That means time is ticking away, and we're probably going to be hearing music. And you know what I want to do on the way out the door, Jim Cushlin, is I want to give we talked about the Mud Hens because, of course, the Tigers are trying to replenish or restock the farm system, including the AAA level as well. Hopefully they get some good prospects back for that. I've got Hens tickets that we can give away right now on the way out the door. I'll do two of them. I got 8 pairs of them for next Wednesday's game against Pawtucket at Fifth Third Field. So, Kush, if you could answer callers number 5 and 6 and give each of them a pair of tickets to the Hens and Pawtucket, I would be delighted. So good luck to you on that. 866-240-1065 is the number to call. Thank you again to all of the wonderful hosts here at the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows here in Sylvania. They have just been fantastic. Thanks to Jim Heller. Thanks to for crying out, the entire crew. I can't think of all of their names at the moment, but I just want to tell everybody this is a first-class event. The volunteers have been wonderful, and if you have an opportunity to come out this weekend and watch some of the action here at the Marathon Classic, please do so. Tickets are discounted all over the place for passes to get here, so by all means, come and support this wonderful event for Northwest Ohio. All right, that's it. All the time that we've got. We'll see what happens over the weekend on the Kyrie story, on the baseball trade story, and we'll be back and analyze it on Monday at 3 o'clock. Do not go away. However, here's Mr. Mike Miller standing over me waiting for the chair. He's coming up next with Drive Time right here on The Ticket. Have a good one.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.